one of the events and circumstances that lead to stress and suffering in our life is when we attribute explanations to events, to what occurs. Attribute, if I say more, blame. Attribute pernicious intention. Pernicious miscalculations and various other variations on these themes. I've talked about this recently in using the analogy that Joko also uses of a boat coming towards us in the fog on a lake, as we're riding in a boat as well. And our reactions of warnings, maybe even anger, upset at the boat not heeding our calls to turn away until the boat gets close enough in the fog for us to see that there's no one in the boat, and how that, let us say, allows us to drop the anger and recriminations and upset about the circumstance and see what can be done skillfully to avoid the collision if possible, to mitigate the effects of the collision, or maybe to jump into the water to get out of the boat. Who knows what we do? But the change and the possibilities of action come out of our no longer attributing self-blame intention to the, what should I say, the one in the boat, the one steering the boat. Another useful means that I sometimes find is a variation on the Gatha of Atonement. Some of you know this Gatha of Atonement. So the variation goes, all harmful actions ever committed by me since of old, all harmful actions ever committed to me since of old, on account of beginningless greed, anger, ignorance, born of body, mouth, and thought, I now acknowledge and atone for them all, acknowledging and being at one with them all. I find it useful sometimes to recite this or to have others recite this, in part to allow us to see how much we hold on to and add on blame, anger, histories and stories to others and to ourselves, and do all sorts of unskillful and harmful things as a result of that. See, so it's very useful to see what is it to acknowledge and be at one with the beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance that arises as this body, mouth, thought of so-called ourself and so-called others, whether the others are specific beings or groups of beings. What is it to really be intimate as the ongoing change or cause and effect that manifests in the behavior and events that we are happy about or not so happy about? Because unless we can be at one in this, with this, we have difficulty living our life skillfully with these events, even responding to them skillfully, because often instead of skillful actions we have our self-centered actions, if I use that kind of word, or our self-resentful actions. It's very difficult to really embrace that ongoing change, or I can say it, ongoing cause and effect is nothing but this Buddha nature that we are, whether it's so-called mine or so-called others' behavior, events, actions. Instead, we want to dream up, I shouldn't even say want to, we have this reactive habit and tendency to dream up explanations that justify or criticize, and then go from there. See? We tend to see some things as so-called coincidences and then some things as so-called the results of, and then you fill in, someone else's bad actions, some my inadequate actions, my skillful actions, my lucky. And you could fill in all sorts of other judgments that end up justifying further planning to try to change how others think, feel, act about it, instead of seeing that everything is the manifesting of cause and effect, or we could say the emptiness that manifests as this nature that is our life. And if we're able to be intimate as accepted without that added layer of self, without getting entangled in beginningless greed, anger, ignorance habits, ignorance meaning confusion about what the nature of reality is, then whatever comes becomes the opportunity to live our life as best we can. Doesn't mean don't have losses, doesn't mean we don't have pain, doesn't mean any such magical thing. We live the life that manifests as this cause and effect. So instead, unfortunately, we often carry along burdens that get in the way of blame and recrimination. And we discover this as we sit in Sashin, especially if we carry that, those appear, and we get to deal with the mind chatter, the subtitles that interfere with this moment, or the voiceover that comments on memories that appear. Any of you ever have voiceovers that comment about what someone else must be meaning and intending and doing and wanting and why? And you could call it voiceover, you could call it, you know, subtitles, or what do they have, these running banners on TVs where they see, that's exactly what this is. And the opportunity to notice that is the opportunity to be free of it, to allow it to arise and pass, to see it as simple cause and effect, beginningless body, mind, habits, greed, anger, ignorance. Those are just, what should I say, shorthand for a whole Penelope, I can't pronounce that word. Anyway, of all sorts of ways of talking about human tendencies. If we can truly acknowledge and be at one with the tendencies that appear and manifest, whether so-called our own or so-called others, then those tendencies need not lead to blame, harm, suffering. Or we keep on working with them. We keep on vowing up all harmful actions. I now acknowledge, I now confess and atone. And then we can let them be. Then they don't have to be carried along. And they appear. And then we bow with them, or whatever other way we find. It's important to be able to not hold these because of the pernicious consequences that they have. And the pernicious consequences are not a product of something new, modern, though we could talk about them in the specific ways that we have them. This is from ancient times. This is what our practice addresses. See? Wang Po, who was second generation after Matsu, who I spoke of yesterday. It's Wang Po, Bai Cheng, and Matsu. Some of you are familiar with Wang Po because in the class a while ago we read his text Chuan Jin Fa Yao, which means translated as the essential transmission of mind dharma. One translation. So you might be familiar with him, remember him. He's a Chan master who lived in the 8th and early 9th century China. But he too addresses this human tendency that we have. He says, just do not bring forth opinions on the basis of seeing, hearing, and perceiving. do not apply thought on the basis of seeing, hearing, and perceiving. Seeing, hearing, and perceiving is, what should I say, covers everything. Even though he mentions just those three forms of speaking of it. Why not do that? Because it's what hinders us from being who we are, from being this fundamental mind, which, he says, neither belongs to seeing, hearing, and perceiving, nor is it separate from them. See? Do not look for mind apart from seeing, hearing, and perceiving. Do not look for your life apart from the seeing, hearing, perceiving events that occur. But of course, if we hold opinion about who, why, who's doing the both, why they're doing it in the way they are, and so forth, then we get in trouble. See? Mind then becomes covered by seeing, hearing, and perceiving, and we do not witness the fundamental, pure, bright basis that is our life. See, that's what he's talking about. This true nature isn't identical, nor is it separate from. It doesn't abide in it, nor does it attach to it. This is always this self-manifesting that is our life. And there's nowhere, no one, no event, nothing that is not its place of the way or truth. That's the most important point that he wants us to get in this. Our opinions of what occurs is another way of saying what we say every day with when we recite the practice principles, caught in self-centered dream. And that's what we're getting the opportunity to see. Again, opinions is a broad phrase. It includes all the variations of self that we take for granted are true, whether about so-called myself or so-called other self. If we believe those opinions, then we think there's somewhere else to look for the truth, look for what is desirable in life, somewhere other than this moment, seeing, hearing, perceiving. This moment, sitting, walking, eating. See, it's because this very moment as it is our true nature, is, to use a word he uses, perfectly bright and universally irradiant. That's one English translation of the word that he uses, which is the Sanskrit citta prabhasvara. But we don't have to use such a fancy word or an ancient word. This very life as it is realized, is actualized, is right here now, is manifesting this true nature of the whole universe. The whole universe, not anywhere else, not anything else. Because from the beginning, this has no fixed nature and is nothing but the cause and effect of the moment. The cause and effect, some of which we quote see, some of which we don't, some of which we want to explain and some of which we can't explain, some of which we get frustrated because we can't explain and get caught up in trying alternatives. Even that, and yet if we can let that reactive trying habit or opinions be, let them arise and pass, then we can see skillfully what's called for now, and we could live in a joyous way. We can be joyous even in painful, difficult circumstances. And we can see how most of our life are not those, except when we believe opinions about what should and shouldn't be, what could and could have. So, okay, as I did yesterday, I'm going to stop now, and we can explore and clarify this a bit. So, yeah.
You talk about voiceover. It reminded me of a show I used to enjoy, TV show called Mystery Science Theater 3000. You know of it? It was this show where they would show these really old, stupid movies, low budget, B and C flick type movies. And these three crazy guys, or actually two robots, in the back, would make wisecracks, talk over through the whole movie. And it reminds me that you know, I experienced that a lot. This monologue, this commentary that goes on, and it's not really that hard to notice that is happening sometimes. Most of the time, I don't. But if I make a slight effort, then you can notice this commentary, this dialogue, monologue that goes on. And it's very entertaining sometimes. Sometimes it seems wise or amusing, or sometimes it's not so much fun, but it always seems to be entertaining in one way or another. But noticing that, you know, that it's helpful, but what's harder for me to practice is to see, I want to say, the source, the what I'm believing that generates this dialogue, this monologue. It's more rare for me to see what I'm believing about myself, or what I think I am, or who I think I am, or who I think they should be. It's much more difficult sometimes to see the source of this monologue and what it stands for.
And though at times it's useful to see, quote, the source, it's not at all necessary because we don't have to go looking for it. The more we can, what should I say, allow the monologue to go and not attach and attend to it, the more the nature of it can be revealed according to circumstances, may be revealed, may, but may not, and it's not important that it is, except that we don't have to attend to it. It can be another one of the cars that drives down the road here as we're sitting or as we're walking or as we're serving food or eating food. It's another bird chirping in the tree, except because it's my monologue, my dialogue, I attend to it. It's nice the way you use that word. You said two robots. It's interesting how when we attribute self to it, it's one thing. When we attribute robotness, sometimes, maybe not anymore, but at least in the time when those TV programs were, there was a more of a sense of how, you know, irrelevant or insignificant the chatter was, because it's just robots.
Yeah, they can get away with a lot more because they're just robots.
But the important point is that these occurrences are just beginningless body-mind habits, cause and effect habits that manifest reactively to circumstances, manifest as ways to entertain and prop up selfness sometimes, or other things. But it's not important to know what they do, but simply to know that once one sees them for what they are, we need not act at their behest, need not be reactive to them, need not be holding the blame for whether our own so-called greed, anger, ignorance, or the so-called of others' greed, anger, and ignorance. So,
well, you're not saying that there's, you know, in noticing and paying attention to, in a way, you're not saying there's nothing to be learned.
I'm saying that's the booby prize. What's important is the experiencing of this moment. Insights aren't what's important. It's the experiencing, even the experiencing of arising of opinions and reaction.
See? We like crisis, though. Even booby crisis.
No, unfortunately, we keep looking for them and try to create them. Insights occur. Let them occur, and then they, what should I say, fall into the ocean of cause and effect that is our life. If we need them, they will appear according to cause-effect. See, that's the part that's not so easy to get, that cause and effect is the way this universe rightly appears. Rightly in the sense that this is the way it is, including our own life. And therefore, we do our best with how it appears. And, of course, all the things we do generate cause and effect. Even just sitting zazen generates the ability to notice these monologues, chatter, etc. The ability to no longer react, or at least catch ourselves as we're in the midst of reacting towards others in not so skillful ways, let's say it that way, or reacting towards ourselves in not so skillful ways. Because of course, whenever we react to others, we're reacting to ourselves in all the different ways that that's so. Okay, there was a hand, but I don't see it.
Yeah,
okay.
Just the idea of the source. I guess the idea of all, whether it's an explanation or, you know, like some version of blame, you know, the experiencing of, you could call it that, often a sense of unease or, you know, the idea of the icy couch, like, I feel like the thought is just a way of getting away from this experiencing of, you know, a very full, which, I mean, includes sound, but it, this body unease is often, I think, in other words, I think of that as more of a source, like, the thinking is moving away from the bodily experience, and what, yeah, the bodily experience of this moment, and which includes, you know, the body of this room, the body of the traffic, the bigger, you know, body of the moment. But yeah, I think what's so striking to me about Sesshin is that I have such immediate access to this alternative, that this full-bodied experience of this moment is immediately like, oh, you know, I'm going off into this, whether it's an some version of an explanation, a thought, you know, thinking, it's all thinking. And, you know, this alternative of being really present is just right there. And it's just, it's so straightforward. Yeah. And that difference is just really striking, you know, the difference between getting very tangled up in thinking in my, you know, outside of the Zendo. And in the Zendo, it's just, you know, it's so clear.
Yeah.
It's really striking.
Yeah, it's, if you want to say, the experiencing of body, mind, of the, whether the so-called known or so-called unknown, the extent that we know this body, mind, experiencing so, to the extent that we don't know it, experiencing so. And it's in a way, this is what this one mind or one body mind is, neither identical with nor separate from the seeing, hearing, neither abiding nor attached to them. It's in all ways self-manifesting. This life that we are manifests as it is, and it's nowhere that is not its place of the way or the truth. That's always, and our experiencing, if I say it in such a way, is the accessing, if I use such, what should I say, utilitarian terms, of accessing exactly who and what we are, to the extent that we do. And we don't determine experience, we just, as soon as we're trying to determine experience, then we've got these two, at least, things of we determining experiencing. And experiencing is forgetting ourselves, if I use that phrase that I used earlier, and being awake as this life universe that we are. I saw someone else who wanted to say something. Okay. Excuse me that sometimes I don't see you because my vision is limited in some sides.
let me see if I understood you right. You said that all of cause and effect is, that's it. That's Buddha nature is cause and effect, or?
Yeah, and let me even not claim that as my own. I mean, Dogen attributes that to the sixth ancestor, that ongoing change is Buddha nature. So let's, we could be cause and effect is Buddha nature. Remember, different ways of translating a word into English from Sanskrit or Chinese or Japanese doesn't make the original word different. It just makes different translators like one word or another. So don't, we need to be flexible and fluid in hearing the words so that we don't get stuck on the English word, but rather get the point that's being made and grasp that.
So, but I have heard, maybe it's Theravada, but I've heard this notion of enlightenment frees you from the wheel, the constant wheel of rebirth. You're free from this constant change.
There's a wonderful koan. That's the second koan in the Mumon Kan, known as Bai Chang's fox or Yakujo's fox. And it's a very well-known koan. And So it's that's exactly, is an enlightened person free of cause and effect? How do you respond to that? But I don't, that's another
that's another talk.
I've actually talked about that somewhere. So if you look at in our digital archives, you could probably find it somewhere, because I know
it's called Napajos Fox.
Okay. So I won't do it now, but yes, that's an idea we have, but the idea is built, let me just briefly make a comment on our attempt to dualize and bifurcate our life and have an idea of cause and effect and have an idea of awakening, and that cause and effect would get, is the problem, and the awakened state will get us somewhere else, and that what awakening would be, and getting caught up in this, in that sort of daydream of believing ideas about practice, then even words like Buddha get us in trouble. Even words like awakening or nirvana become traps. See? And I'm sure you're familiar with the phrase nirvana and samsara are in two. I mean, in a way, when you recite the Heart Sutra, there's variations on that. But to really grasp that and see it is something, or live it and embody it, is different than just being able to say it or even talk about it, because of our tendencies of, what should I say, adding opinions, to quote Wang Po, on the basis of seeing, hearing, perceiving, thinking. I'll
add on. How does the koan go? Is it too long?
It's a long call.
Okay.
You, someday you could look at it.
Okay.
It's in the Mumonkan easily. It's about a, if I remember an English translation of it, it's about a page, the koan itself. So anyway. And Dogen has at least one fascicle and maybe two. No. He has at least two, because there are, he has one in, that's an early fascicle and one that's later, and the later one is slightly different than the earlier ones, discussing this very. So, but that's enough for now. You could look at the talk, and you could then proceed. It's a nice koan, because in a way it gets to the fundamental point of what we do to avoid being this moment experiencing, what we do to, that gets in the way of our functioning and manifesting this wisdom and compassion that we are, and instead manifest ignorance, greed, anger, which are beginningless human tendencies. Beginningless meaning that, that cause and effect means that they arise in our life. And we get to choose to live them or choose to not get caught up in them. And the way we get to choose is by seeing and practicing, seeing what's going on and making practice effort as best we can. So. Yes?
Something that, that Wendy said, just like to follow up on that. She used the term, or the term of full, maybe I misquoted you, but the full bodiedness thing I can say I've experienced and what Sesshin can support us in doing is rediscovering or discovering the joy of that. And actually, at some point, maybe preferring the full-bodiedness, even if it's uncomfortable, to our thinking mind, you know, all the explanations and attributions and all that whole fever dream stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my life outside the Zendo is of that character.
Mm-hmm.
So, and maybe it's something like working with addiction, whereby the key is to start to begin to prefer sobriety over whatever state you can access that covers that up.
Mm-hmm. And to be free, as the Gatha encourages us, of so-called past stories or anger or harmful actions that we've done to others and the blame, or that others have so-called done to us and the blame, that we carry along and that tinges and blinds us. It tinges everything we see and experience, and it gets in the way, if I say it that way. It becomes the focus as opposed to the present moment experiencing. And addictions grow out of that focus because we're reacting to those beginningless greed, anger, ignorance. Again, greed, anger, and ignorance are shorthands. Ignorance means confusion, the nature of seeing the world and our life dualistically, all the other kinds of ways of being deluded about this present moment. And greed is trying to pull things towards us and have it our way, and anger is reactions and pushing things away from us. If I use those in as shorthands. So, yeah. As I've said, and we've talked about, in a way, our practice is simply the practice of working with being self-addict. See? Or as the Buddha says, it's because of delusion and attachment, or thirsting, which is addiction, that we don't enjoy the awakened life that we are. Anyone? Anything? Okay. Thank you.
Copyright Elihu Genmyo Smith.